This podcast is brought to you by Audible. Audible has over 150,000 audiobook titles to choose from. audiblepodcast.com/truckertom. Tango Tango Papa 1773. September 12, 2013.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion? The product of a tortured brain.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you once again from home. So today was Wednesday, Wednesday, September the 11th, and so I have one more day to go, Thursday the 12th, and back to work on the 13th. So today I met my friend for lunch up in Bella Vista, and then on the way back I went ahead and I left my motorcycle at the there's a Honda dealership that I left it at on the way back. I've been having some problems with gas. It's probably my own fault. When I was home the last time, I was going to ride it that last day that I thought that I was going to be off, and it turned out that I had to go back to work that day. So the thing ended up sitting for, 2 months. It should have been able to sit 2 months, but I don't know what happened, but in any case, the gas kind of went bad, and it just, when I was able to start it, and I rode it quite a bit, and I tried to get, get the bad gas out of it, because it was kind of backfiring and what have you, and it wasn't idling very good. It did improve after I rode it and put new gas in it. It did improve somewhat, but it got to, now it's to the point where it's not getting any better. So I wanted the, it's time to get the oil changed anyway in it. And so I had to leave it with the Honda dealer, because at this point they're backed up about a week and a half. So I made sure they realized that I won't be back to pick it up until come home once again. And that seemed to be fine with them. And so anyway, it's probably going to be about a week and a half before they even get it in the shop, which that's great, because at that point I'll have been gone about a week and a half or so. So in any case, it's got a, there's probably the carburetor, it does have a carburetor, and that's probably fouled with the bad gas. So I'm just going to have to make a point of every time I'm home, try to make a point of riding it. Now, I did even have some of that gas stabilizer in it, but I think that, that can only do so much. And, so I'm just going to either have to make a point of riding it, or at least, running it every time, that I come home. And even, but the problem is, if I run it, obviously, I can't run it enough to, burn up enough gas and you have to put new gas in to kind of counteract the effects of the gas that, is going bad. So, I don't know. In the past, if I try to ride it about once a month, even in the winter months, depending on how the weather goes, usually it is, we have some nice days here a lot of times in the winter, and it is possible to ride it, but on the other hand, it's, we can have bad days, and sometimes the bad days are sort of happening while I'm home. And so it's kind of a problem. But so I don't know. But this is really the first time. Actually, it's not. I did have a couple of years ago, I had some bad gas, where the thing was kind of backfiring a little bit. But then it did go ahead and clear up. But this time it cleared up some, but not completely. And there may have been some residual effect from a couple of years ago as well. So in any case, took it up there and, they'll fix it. I'm not a mechanic, don't want to be a mechanic. And, find someone that's, they're professionals and they've worked on it before. And I have every confidence that they'll be able to fix it. And that'll kind of solve the problem. And so I did that and then went over with my parents to my aunt's house and spent several hours over there this evening. Then when I got back home, I've kind of spent some time cleaning the hard drive off of this MacBook Pro. excuse me. The hard drive was kind of starting to fill up, and so it was time to sort of go through and clean some stuff off. Now there's still a bunch of stuff that I probably could get off of here, but it's really a time consuming process, kind of going through files, sort of determining what can stay and what can go. And that you can spend hours doing something like that, but I've got it kind of cleaned back down so that I've got, I don't know, let me take a look, I think I've got at least 20 gigabytes free again. 20 gigabytes, 20.4, and so that's enough to last, that should last quite a while, until it's time to till it's time to kind of move files off of it again. And I don't use it. I use this machine for podcasting. Of course, I'm using that 13-inch white plastic MacBook more than this one for podcasting. But the files do end up on this machine as well because I always copy them to Dropbox from the other machine so that they do end up on this machine. So periodically they just have to be cleaned off. It's just one of those things. You got to clean the files off ever so often because you think, well, how big's an MP3 file? Well, it can be anywhere from 20 megabytes probably on the small end, 15 to 20 megabytes on the small end, and sometimes they've been upwards of 100 megabytes, kind of depending. And, for a longer podcast, they can end up kind of being bigger, and it's surprising, they do add up. They do add up to gigabytes. So, over time. And anyway, spent some time doing that and kind of got that all worked out. So, what I wanted to do, I've got a comment here from Bruce, a.k.a. Mr. Gadgets, and he's sort of responding to the podcast that I put up last night. And so before I do that, I want to talk a bit about Audible. Of course, I'm an Audible subscriber. I have the one audiobook per month plan. And the great thing, I was thinking about that today, the great thing about Audible is that as I've said many times, I like to learn. I find it very easy, in fact, to learn out of my own curiosity. it's actually is kind of like falling off of a log. Easy. It's very easy for me to learn out of my own curiosity. It's very difficult for me to learn something because I have to. That doesn't work very well. And so, therefore, I don't, you know, I just make a point of not learning things because I have to. And, you know, now this, you know, there's exceptions to that, but, you know, like for work, for example, sometimes there are exceptions to that, but for the most part, I learn out of my own curiosity. And the great thing about Audible is that it lends itself for me to be able to sort of learn out of my own curiosity. You know, with over 150,000 titles to choose from, they make it incredibly easy to find, to find topics. You know, in my case, I'm interested in nonfiction, mostly nonfiction. It becomes extremely easy to for me to find books, audiobooks, versions that are really, you know, sort of help me learn out of my own curiosity. And it's just, it's a tremendous service. It's really, you know, really Audible is an amazing resource to have. And it's worth it to me. It's worth every penny, you know, the monthly subscription. So, you know, if you're like me and you learn out of your own curiosity, Audible really is the ticket. So you can sign up for a free audiobook if you go to audiblepodcast.com/truckertom. That's audiblepodcast.com/truckertom. And sign up and get a free trial and get a free audiobook. So I've got this comment from Bruce, and he's kind of responding to the podcast, as I say, that I put up last night. And so here is Bruce.
Thomas, it is Bruce, and I just got finished listening to In the World and Not of the World, and had a couple of comments on it. I do find it very interesting, and one of the reasons why I listen to the show is this particular path, this particular spiritual path that you're on. And I do like your kind of take on In the World, Not of the World. Not exactly some of the things that I heard, you know, preached from various pulpits, you know, through the years. But it's certainly an interesting, unique take. And there were a couple of things, though, that came to mind. And towards the end of the show, you actually came upon one of my comments. As far as accepting compliments, you know, really, accepting compliments is something one has to learn how to do, and no one teaches you how to do it, or at least no one teaches you how to do it properly.
Well, let me go ahead and interrupt. You're right. You know, you really do have to learn how to accept compliments, and at the same time, you have to learn how to accept gifts from people. You know, because there are times when you just have to, you know, just accept the gift from someone, and, you know, it's a nice thing, and, or whatever they've done, you know, maybe they bought your meal or whatever it is, they've given you something, and you accept the gift. But the problem, it comes in if you end up, sort of feeling obligated, to do whatever it is they want, you know, and the typical thing would be, you know, I don't know if they still do it anymore, but at one time, you know, a number of years ago, you know, that you'd go to an airport and you'd have these, you know, they were called Moonies, you know, and they'd give you a free flower, and, you know, it's kind of a religious cult, this Reverend Sun Young Moon. And they'd give you, I think that was the one, and they would give you a flower, but then they would expect something in return. And, you know, the Salvation Army, or was it the Salvation Army? No, I've got my charities mixed up. It was a veterans group that they had like a poppy, and I don't know if they still do that anymore. I haven't seen that for a number of years. But they would give you this little, kind of like a little poppy flower, and, supposedly it was quote-unquote free, but, they really expected a donation in return. And, that's not really a, when someone does that, that's not really a gift. It's an obligation. They're giving you an obligation. And, you do have to learn how, that's just a kind of an example of how, it can go wrong, or how people can misuse giving and receiving. But you should be able to give without any sense of obligation. You should, if I give something to somebody, I make sure that I'm not expecting anything back. I'm not giving to receive from them. I'm not giving to manipulate them. And but it could be that, and we'll get to this later, later on, because I did listen to Bruce's comment. Later on, we'll kind of talk. He's going to talk about, he doesn't mention it directly, but it's possible, for someone to have the right intention. So let's say that someone, I give to somebody with just, I've got the right intention. I'm not giving in order to obligate, but they receive it in the wrong way. Or let's say that someone gives me a compliment and they don't mean to puff up my ego, but I receive the compliment in the wrong way and my ego puffs, the wrong side of my ego puffs up. So it's fraught with problems on both sides. This giving and receiving, whether it's an actual physical gift or if it's just a, compliment, something as simple as a compliment. And so, but it is, we're really not taught to do it. And when it comes right down to it, we're not taught to do a lot of things, or we're sort of taught to do it the wrong way, just because of, the way we're raised or whatever. And most kids, as I've said before, most kids, the parents, the kid gets a new whatever it is, and the kid naturally likes to kind of show off, and, the kid gets a new shoes or a cowboy hat if it's a boy, or a dress if it's a girl, or a doll or whatever it is. And the kid just, the people around the kid, parents and friends, relatives, whoever, kind of make a big deal out of it, and the kid sort of gets a little ego boost out of it. And that's perfectly natural, because we're first of nature and then a spirit. And so, kid kind of grows up, the ego has to grow up. and hopefully at some point the ego matures, but they have to grow up, and it's not going to be perfect. You got to kind of hold them. It's the parents' job to sort of contain them so they don't damage themselves. They don't run out in the street and get run over because they don't know any better. That's a physical example, but there's other examples. You don't let your kid do something that's going to really cause them to become enemies with their conscience. If you're a good parent, you're not going to let them be around a child molester, for example. You're going to watch those kids like a hawk. And kind of really, because that's your job as a parent, is to watch those kids, and to be very cognizant of who you let them, you know, who you let them be around and who you let watch them and so on and so forth. And but if you don't have your stuff together as a parent or you know, as yourself, if you don't have your own self-control and what have you, then the kid, by extension, your child is in danger. You know, because, you know, parents all the time, they don't have a really good sense of who they can trust and who they can't. So, but anyway, I could go on and on and on. So I just wanted to kind of interject a little bit. You know, we're not really taught how to receive and give, but it's kind of up to us. As we become adults, it's kind of up to us to, you know, whether we've been taught right or wrong. It really is up to us to sort of figure it out. You know, what is the right thing and how to do it the right way.
And thusly, you get into these things of you don't really know that really the way to do it is to do exactly what you said, to not necessarily be completely emotionless, because giving a compliment to someone or receiving a compliment, it's actually a two-way transaction, right? The person who's giving you the compliment, at least in a vast majority of cases, is not attempting manipulation. There is something that you have done or something about you that they have felt moved to give you that compliment.
Okay, let me interrupt. And so again, that's true. Not everybody is out to manipulate. But if you receive in the, you know, your ego, you know, the people that are giving you the compliment may not be out to manipulate, but you got to be careful because the wrong side of your ego is out to turn them into manipulators, whether they want to be manipulators or not. You know, that's the danger. The wrong side of our ego can take something that's just perfectly innocent and sort of take it in the wrong way and try to turn it into something that it was not intended. And so it's kind of dangerous. It's not always the other person's fault. It's you know, it's just as likely, if not more likely, that the rotten side of our own ego is, that's our big danger, way more so than you know, the world. There are plenty of rotten people in the world, but from the standpoint of an individual, the way I look at it, the rotten side of my own ego is way more dangerous to me than, whatever dangers lurk out in the environment.
And as a singer, very early on in life, I learned that I was going to be in this situation quite a bit because of my voice. And it came to me very early on that I was not doing either myself or the other person any kind of a favor if I tried to be self-deprecating, and because that made the transaction be longer than it needed to be. The person had some reason why they were motivated that they needed to give me the compliment, and I needed to just say thank you, and we both moved on. Because anything more than that was really, I hate to sound harsh, but it was really a waste of both of our times. If I was going to be self-deprecating, and then they would, it's not worth the time and effort. Just accept the compliment and move on. But nobody teaches you that. I learned that myself. And in the process, I learned not only how to take a compliment, but also how to discern manipulation. So the classic, as you say, car salesman kind of manipulation, that type of person I have, at least I like to think a bit more.
Okay, let me go ahead and interrupt, because as you were talking there, if you can learn how to receive a compliment. You know, someone's giving you a compliment. You know, in Bruce's case, you know, you're a good singer. They like the way he sang and what have you. And he learned to just say thank you, and and was able to move on. But because of that, because he was able to get the rotten side of his own ego out of the way and simply say thank you. And, you know, because he was able to do that, then all of a sudden, then it becomes obvious when someone is kind of, you know, they're becoming, you know, they're overly complimentary. And then the rotten people that are trying to manipulate you kind of stand out like a sore thumb. But if you don't learn to take compliments the right way, if you sort of allow the compliment to go to your head, even if the other person didn't mean for that to happen, but if the rotten side of your ego sort of imbibes it anyway, then you're left just absolutely vulnerable to the true manipulators. And so if you can learn to, in this case, it's a very simple thing. Learn to take a compliment the right way and not, you know, you say thank you and what have you, but you don't get, you know, you don't allow the rotten side of your ego to get a sort of an illicit charge out of it. Then when you do encounter a manipulator, you're going to be able to see it. And they're going to stand out, and if you take a compliment the wrong way, whether regardless of how it was intended, if you take a compliment the wrong way, then it really clouds the situation. It just really kind of if you think of it's like one of those jellyfish, you know, it's got like poison ink that just, you know, make, you know, makes this big cloud, you know, big dark cloud, and kind of obscures everything, you know, while it's about to sting you. So, or I don't know if they sting or not, but they make this big cloud so they can make a getaway, I think. So, but if you accept compliments, if you take a compliment the wrong, you know, regardless of how the compliment was intended, if you take it the wrong way, it's really going to cloud things up and make it very easy for the real manipulator to come along and sort of take advantage of you.
Discernment in terms of people who are deliberately trying to manipulate me. But that comes from being able to be not tied to one's ego or not tied to one's emotions there, and being there. Now, a couple of interesting, just general questions about your philosophy. Man, that Stratus just really nearly cut me off. Anyway, a situation which I'm sure you're very familiar with. So, one of the things, and I'll use a specific example, although this is, and it kind of relates to this in the world but not of the world. I'd be interested in exactly what, beyond just the whole thing of, you know, the generalized statement of closer to your creator, of what your particular philosophy and your, you know, kind of spiritual guru, and I forget his name right now, that you, a lot of your kind of things are based on, your statements are based on. What is the reasoning of why we are here?
Well, let me interrupt. Now, you're talking about Roy Masters. I don't know that he's ever really, said why, you know, specifically why we're here. But when I talk about why we're here, I'm basing it on my own, you know, sort of my, really my own observations and my own kind of reasoning. And, briefly, we are here. We're obviously created. We're here as, you know, our creator, you know, human beings, mankind. Human beings are at the top of the food chain, you know. So God was able to, you know, he's able to create, you know, all kinds of animals and planets and stars and trees and birds and frogs and whatever else, but they are what they are. And, you know, you take take any animal and it can't be anything other than what it is. It, you know, they're aware of their environment, but they cannot become something else. They don't have a choice. They are what they are. And they can't, you know, they just don't have a choice. You know, and they respond to whatever they're, you know, they respond to their environment, they respond, you know, and they have these instincts, and it's almost as if they've got this, you can think of it as programming. It's kind of an instruction set, kind of hard-coded into their brain. And they've got a certain learning ability as individuals, you know, as individual animals, but, for example, but they can't go beyond that. You know, they're not conscious of their own existence. They're simply aware of their environment. They're not conscious of their own existence. Human beings, you know, if you're God, how would you create a creature? You know, because it would be easy. You know, you could create a creature like any kind of animal. Is basically it's like a very sophisticated robot. You know, and so if you created a man, that would say, "I love you, I love you, I love you," to the creator, well, what good would that be? You know, so you'd want to give that creation a choice. You know, how would you create love if it's just a robot? A robot can't love. No matter how sophisticated you make the robot, it cannot love. And so human beings have this extra choice. You know, we can choose the wrong thing. So therefore, that's why we're here. We're, you know, on this planet, we're here. This is my own belief. We are here to, you know, we're sort of placed here to learn where the wrong choice goes, and sort of, if we're really motivated, sort of, you know, kind of find the truth, you know, continue to look for the truth until we find it, and continue on that path. And it's not an instant thing, but we're here to sort of find out where the wrong, you know, where wrong leads, where, you know, moving, you know, kind of becoming an externalized creature, where, you know, where that leads, you know, where the rebellion leads. We're sort of born in rebellion. We're sort of born in a sense. We're sort of born in into a Stockholm syndrome, you know, that's already in progress. But we can be saved from that. And that's what salvation's all about. So that's why we're here, you know, at least the way I see it. And you know, and beyond that, you know, there's only so much that we can know as human beings. You know, because if you just look at the size of the universe, the distances and the sizes are just so unimaginably, unbelievably vast. And we're so, you know, just infinitesimally small. How much can we know? how much can we become conscious of? Now, obviously, our conscience or our consciousness is potentially much bigger than we are ourselves, than we are physically. You know, we have this huge conscious potential to be really conscious, huge consciousness. But nonetheless, our consciousness is dwarfed. Clearly, it's dwarfed by our Creator. There's no comparison between the Creator that brought us and into existence and sustains our existence versus what we are. We're creations, but we have a choice, and so we're here to find out where the wrong choice leads, born in sin. Find out where the wrong choice leads, and then we can be saved from it. And so that's what I believe. Why we are here.
I'll set a statement forth on this to kind of start this conversation. My wife found on Facebook, and I passed it on to other people who follow me, a really interesting quote from C.S. Lewis the other day, which I think is apropos. And I think it's apropos for anyone on any kind of spiritual path. And that statement was, the question is not, do we have a soul? We are a soul. We have a body. So we are here in this physical world, and so the question becomes, and I guess this is the point of every spiritual path, why are we here, right? Why are we in this physical existence? And my personal predilections towards spiritual path indicates to me that I can tell partially why I'm here because of the parameters within which I am operating, i.e. we are operating in a world that is time-based, right? We have an operation here in a physical world where time exists and there is cause and effect. And thusly, this kind of ties in with what you were saying about being manipulated and your emotions being manipulated by other people. The cause is the compliment from the other person, and the effect is, well, what is going to be the effect on you? And so I'd be kind of interested in that. As a kind of side discussion of this, and kind of related to the in the world but not of the world, for my Christian Science brethren, and I'm not a Christian Science scientist, nor have I actually been close friends, but I have been acquaintances with several people who are of the Christian Science persuasion, and I've had a couple of them explaining to me. Now, if you go to the average Christian Science church in a city, you're looking at a church that's fairly well-to-do. In fact, the smallest Christian Science worship facility I've ever been in was not the fanciest church in the Kansas City metropolitan area, but it was no slouch in the little suburb that it was in. And so it's kind of interesting because these are people who are on a very spiritual kind of path, but they obviously have a lot of, things connected with their church. And if you've known any Christians, are not the poorest people that you know. They may not be the richest people that you know, but they're, at least comfortable. And this, kind of interested me vis-a-vis the kind of general Christian, give up everything and follow me kind of mentality. And one of the people, actually both of the people who I asked this, I felt close enough to ask them, and they tried to explain it to me. It was somewhat along the way, and anybody who listens to you that's a Christian Scientist, please do call in and correct me on this. But my general recollection was, this physical world doesn't mean anything. This physical world that we are in, they're somewhat Gnostic in this regard, is not important. It is the spiritual life that is important. Therefore, if we do not have success within the physical world, if we do not have the ability to accrue money, we are assigning to money a meaningfulness that we do not recognize. So the acquisition of money is not seen as being something against their spiritual belief. It is rather something that shows that the physical aspects of this world are not important to them, and thusly the acquisition of physical objects and having success within the physical world is something that is a reinforcement of their spiritual belief. And I think that is a somewhat interesting, although not totally unique to them, but it was the first time the concept was ever introduced to me, was their particular sect. So that, I think, would be an interesting general topic. I would be interested, I don't know about your other listeners, about that type of thing. The other thing you said was something interesting in the kind of the middle of your conversation. And this relates once again back to the fact that I am a singer, and in fact I have made a long avocation and a semi-professional avocation of music and musical theater. And I would submit to you that musical theater is the most profoundly effective and highest form of music of theater, because it combines visual things like the sets and costumes. It combines the music as well as the acting and the kinesthetic, the movement, the dance, things like that. Now, the average person thinking of a Broadway musical from the 50s may not think of that, but I'm saying think of things like Les Miserables, and I'm not talking about the movie production. I'm talking about a onstage production. And the music there does. And in fact, that's why movies are so effective. The underscoring of the movie affects your emotions. If you don't think so, watch a movie without any underscoring and see if you have the same feelings.
Okay, now let me interrupt. Absolutely. The music, you know, music, you're talking about music and movies and what have you, and that really makes the movie, you know, the people that are putting a movie together, if they score it properly, it really adds a lot to the story, you know, because you can, you know, that it becomes a, not only it's you know, there's an emotional element, but if they do the music right in a movie, it becomes part of the story, because there's you can almost think of the music in movies as a language, as a type of language. And so if you were to take the dialogue away, you know, and then you just have only music with the images on the screen, you know, with people doing whatever they're doing. And so there's actually a kind of a language to the music, to movie music specifically. And we've kind of, because we've watched movies, we all kind of know what that is. You know, you think of a suspense movie, or, you know, where they have this, the certain type of music, and maybe it's jarring sometimes to get you to jump when something happens on the screen. So there's a type of language that's, you know, or the swelling music, you know, if something emotionally nice happens between people, or people are reunited or whatever. There's a certain type of music that's appropriate for that. But so music, what you're saying is music does have an emotional effect. Now, when I say in the world, but not of it, you know, you could take that kind of in the wrong way. And that's not to say that you can't interact with the world. You know, it's possible. You know, we do have emotions as human beings. We do have, you know, we have likes and we have dislikes and we have emotions. But our natural emotions are relatively muted compared to, you know, because otherwise we end up kind of perverting them and making them sort of amplifying them, making them into things that they were never, that they're really not intended to be. But our natural emotions are fairly muted by contrast. And so it is possible, you know, you like ice cream or whatever. Well, you know, it can be a kind of a pleasurable experience. There are plenty of other pleasurable experiences, and there's plenty of unpleasurable experiences. But at the same time, in the world but not of it, you're not. If you're really in the world but you're not of the world, you're not taking your identity from the outside world. You're not using the outside world as a means of driving a wedge between yourself and what you know of as a guilty conscience. You know, that's kind of standing there telling you know that you're wrong, you know. So it's, if you have the right source of identity and you're not, you've kind of made friends with your conscience and you get the right source of identity, then it's possible to interact with other people and interact with the world. And, but it's not really kind of corrupting the relationship you have with your creator. You know, and words, you know, what I'm talking about right now, it's difficult to talk about because the problem is that we have to communicate with words. And people can have sort of knee-jerk reactions to different words, you know. And it's one thing for me to kind of try to talk about this, and it's someone else may, you know, different people are going to hear different things. And so you have to find these things out for yourself. You know, you can hear me talk about it, but ultimately, you have to find these things out for yourself. That's, you have to go, in other words, you have to be on your own journey. And each one of us has to. We have to. You know, someone else can't do it for us. We have to do this out of our own curiosity. But it is entirely possible to you kind of react emotionally to this or that, but it's not, you know, as I say, our natural emotions are pretty well muted compared to what a lot of people typically think that are human emotions, where you have these, you know, sort of really exaggerated emotional reactions. That's not natural. That's not normal. And I don't care if you take a survey and you say that, well, the vast majority of people have all these, you know, these wild emotional swings, that must make it normal. I'm sorry, it doesn't make it normal. It's not right. Our natural emotions are pretty well muted. And that's my opinion. And my philosophy is working for me because my anxiety is gone. I have no anxiety. That's not to say that, my world is my life is perfect and everything always goes fine. It doesn't. But I don't have any anxiety. And the anxiety's gone. And so that's what gives me the confidence to say that, somewhere along the line, the philosophy that this trip that I've been on, this journey, this philosophy that I've kind of developed, it certainly has some merit for me because you know, my anxiety is gone. And so, but it's entirely possible. You know, you just have to, if you can learn, figure out the right way to relate to the world, and it's a kind of a tricky thing, but if you can figure out the right way to relate to the world, then it's entirely possible to, you know, you can interact with people and, you know, so on and so forth, but at the core, you're not taking your identity from those interactions. That's really kind of the best way that I can put that.
So this is just a series of sounds. I think that's an exact quote of what you said. This is just a series of sounds that does have the ability to elicit emotions with you. Music has the ability to raise your emotions or to give you a sense of pathos that would go beyond what you might even think was possible, given the things that were happening in your life. Music is a very powerful thing, but it's just a series of sounds. And where does that fit into your philosophy of being manipulated? As always, hope you're safe out there, and I'll wave as you drive by from home. If you happen to go by on your way back to work by the Kansas City area, as always, I would welcome a chance to have a meal with you again, but wanting that, drive safely, and we'll talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, well, thank you, Bruce. So, you know, now when you watch a movie, you know, and they've got their movie score and what have you, or it could be a musical or whatever, you know, like a Broadway musical. I've never been to a musical, but, you know, something, you know, that type of thing. But I've seen, you know, video clips of that type of thing. So I kind of have an idea of what it's like, but let's say a movie score. You know, and so it kind of, you know, you got these, it's kind of a language that's going on, and that you can, again, you can interact with people and even movies, and especially if the movie is actually telling you a story. The movie is, really good movies are morality plays. You know, they're, you know, the difference between right and wrong. Really good ones are usually, they're, you know, they have elements of morality plays in them. And that would include them, you know, and music, it just becomes a tool to tell a story. It's a storytelling element. So you're not really being manipulated. Now, if an example of someone, you know, if you remember Manuel Noriega, you remember that? You know, the guy in Panama, and so the U.S. government decided they wanted him out of there, and, you know, so what they did, and I don't, I do remember this, I don't know why, but I do remember it, but it's an excellent example of someone being manipulated with music. They had these gigantic speakers, I guess, and, you know, because the news media never really, reported on it. They did report on it because I know about the story, but even at that point, I wasn't watching much television, so maybe they showed. But anyway, they had some kind of speakers, and, you know, the U.S. military did, and they played this Nancy Sinatra song, you know, "These Boots Are Made for Walkin'," and I guess they played it at a horribly loud volume, over and over and over, until he relented. He finally couldn't take it anymore, and that's a case of Manuel Noriega was manipulated by the music. You know, they were using it as a kind of a torture tool, and he became manipulated. Well, now, of course, he was a rotten person. You know, he's a dictator or whatever, and he you can look him up, but I don't think he was a very good guy. But he could be manipulated, you know, by that type of means. And But that's a case where, that's a clear-cut case where someone is being manipulated by music, you know, is sort of used as a almost like a form of torture. But you're not really being manipulated per se. Now, you could say, well, technically you're being manipulated because they're manipulating your emotions or whatever. But, you know, movie, musical, it's a storytelling element. The music itself is a storytelling element if it's done properly. So that's kind of not really, I'm not really looking at that as the sort of negative manipulation. They're not negatively, you know, music in a movie is not negatively manipulating the wrong side of your ego. Because that's really where we have to watch out, is the wrong side of our ego sort of interacting with other people in the world, sort of, you know, the wrong side of people's egos sort of all interacting together and becoming worse. And so that's really what we have to watch out for. You know, being in the world, we're in the world, but don't take your identity from the world. You know, the core of who you are and your, you know, your sense of right and wrong, you can't take that from the world. Now, someone, you could come along and someone could tell you what their idea is of right and wrong, and that can cause you to, you know, it kind of awakens something within you, and you say, yeah, that's right, or no, that's wrong. It can awaken something within you, but ultimately it has to awaken something within you. You can't just take it on someone else's word that this is right or this is wrong. The idea is that it has to awaken something within you. And if it's able to awaken something with whatever that something is within you, then you've got it yourself. And then you go on your own journey. You become self-correcting and so on and so forth. And you don't have to have someone continue. You know, maybe they can help you along the way at first, but ultimately you've got to go on, you know, off in your own direction. You've got to go on your own journey, and. Yeah, and it has to be out of your own curiosity. So, anyhow, I think I'm going to go ahead and cut this off. Need to get around and get to bed. And got one more day here at home and back to work on Friday. So, in any case, hope everyone is having a great week. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.